this has been a good discussion, but, you know, hey, we got a special guest tonight. I'm excited. I've been waiting for this one for weeks. You know, it's always good, you know, because a couple of us, we from Michigan, so it's always good to have one of our own on the show. And especially when they've had an illustrious career all the way through high school, through college. You know, our guest tonight was a prep star at Lloyd Norris High School in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where he was Parade Magazine and Rival Net National Player of the Year as a senior. Went on to Michigan State to have an amazing career where he was on second team All Big Ten, but is known, and he kind of broke my heart, was known for the touchdown to catch against Michigan in 2001 out of nowhere. Caught it in the end zone to lead the Spartans over Michigan that year. Went on first round draft choice with the Atlanta Falcons, where he was part of the run DVD. Went on to play for the Lions, played for Washington and for Seattle. But what I think was great about him, what we'll have a chance to talk about, is that his life beyond sports, where he started the New World Flood, a nonprofit organization that goes into schools and teaches kids all over the country and over the eyes overseas about really flooding their community with community service, kind acts, making a difference in the world. Please welcome to Real Sports Guys, Todd T.J. Ducky. Welcome, T.J.
Yo, what up?
K-Zoo in the house, what up? We got, I'm flooded by the K-Zoo in the house.
K-Zoo in the house,
that's right.
What? It don't change.
It don't change. Ty, before we get into the interview, you heard us talking about the NFL bounty.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've played in the NFL, you're familiar, you played football, you played on both sides of the ball. Provide us with your perspective on this issue.
You know, and I caught the last tell bit of what you guys are talking about, but I do agree with what you said. When it comes to a person's livelihood, when it comes to physically hurt somebody intentionally, I can't agree with that, but interception, big play, something like that. It's an incentive amongst teams. Like you said, you got stickers in high school in junior high in the playground. You got the girls' attention. I mean, you got to make plays. And football, football's a brutal sport. It's a barbarian sport. I mean, when I ran the ball, my job, I wanted to punish you. And if that meant, you know, you're getting a headache, something happening to you, you're getting hurt, that's part of what my job, my running style was. Now, I wouldn't want anything to happen after the 60 minutes and on the street, but within the lines, you know, you got to go out and be that warrior. So it's hard to separate the two, but if you're going to intentionally hurt somebody, I can't agree with that.
Now, you played on some good teams. Did you have that folks who on the defense or whatever that had those kind of competitive things they put with each other? Was that things that on offense you knew folks talking about?
I mean, yeah, even like as kids. I mean, who's the first person to go down on a kickoff? Who's the first person to touch the ball carrier? Whatever it was back then, it might have been you get a donut, you know what I'm saying? But as a kid, you get instilled with that's part of the game is to go and we highlight the most physical, the most dangerous, the most meanest competitor. We highlight that. So
that's
now
right.
That it's brought to light, it's like, oh, how could they? But you glorify the big hits and you glorify all this and you want to see that. So, I mean, I don't recommend that I'm not with intentionally going to hurt somebody, but it's like that's like saying tell Michael Jordan you can't dunk all game because you're too good. You know, I mean that's just he'll go and he'll dunk every play if possible, but you can't do that. So that's how I look at it.
Well, hey, ladies and gentlemen, you're the Real Sports Guys. We're here with Todd Duckett talking about a little bit about the what's happened in the NFL bounty. You know, learning more about your story. And this one, I used to work in college admissions, and I used to recruit, and I could see the transition of when high school players stopped playing multiple sports. But what most people might not know about you, that, you know, you were a four-sport athlete. You were an all-around type athlete in high school and growing up. Can you talk a little bit about how playing those multiple sports contributed to your development as a player?
Yeah, it was a big help. Each sport involved a different type of explosive dynamic, different footwork, different thinking. Track was more of a individual sport, and basketball, baseball, more of a team sport. So it taught you how to work with other people in other environments. It's almost a different way to problem solve. And mm-hmm. I look at it as a chance to, it grew me as a total overall package. In football season, I didn't have the most nimble feet, but basketball kept me able to move and to stay on my toes. Track, it gave a chance to open up my lungs and work on my sprinting ability. Baseball, hand-eye coordination was huge. And also, there was never a downtime, so it kept me out of trouble. It kept me always in a competitive mind state and always focused on my goals and setting goals. And if you start to limit, for me, eliminating some of those things, you know, a 15, 16-year-old young man, they, you know, tend to not follow the rules sometimes. So it was a chance for me to stay focused, keep my head in the books, and try to make something happen for the school.
And as you look at, you know, you have a chance to interact with a lot of young people in the work that you do. As you start to see some of these younger athletes specialize, I mean, how do you feel about that, and what do you say to some of these younger athletes?
I say do as many sports as possible until you get close to whatever your passion or you really enjoy doing. Up until my senior year of high school, I did everything. And then I didn't play basketball my senior year after football season. So I had some time. I took that off. Majority of that was spent during recruiting, and I knew basketball wouldn't have been what I was going to do in college. And also I spent that time preparing for track, but I took baseball off. So I think the closer you get to, if you're able to get a scholarship and that's going to be what provides that scholarship, then I think you should break away and focus in on whatever that one sport may be. But for the most part, I mean, you should continue to play other sports and build your athletic ability and be an overall athlete.
Now, Phil, totally, you it was almost like you pulled a Deion Sanders. Like, you go from track and go over to play baseball and go back to track.
Man,
is that true?
Talk to me about that. Yeah, during track season, I had a couple. I threw the shot, ran 100 4x1, and usually the field events would go first, and it fell in before. If I had a baseball game, a home baseball game that same day, I could get my shot put in, and then I could get in the first three innings or so. And then after the first three, four innings, it was usually time to start running. So I would stop playing and then go run, and that'd be my day. And I didn't have social network and all these other things occupy my thoughts. And I was just straight an athlete trying to build a total package and compete. And, I mean, I had friends who played both, so I got a chance to hang out with both. I enjoyed doing both. So I didn't look at it as a chore. And in my free time, both my parents were educators, so my free time, you know, acquired knowledge was always number one on the list. And the older I got in high school, in the recruiting process, yeah, your parents and everybody tell you, but when you have some big head coaches, high school or college head coaches coming in, and the first thing they ask is about your grades, that changed the whole conversation. So, yeah, I could run, I could do all these things, but being able to continue to graduate with a 3-2, on top of that, that's what solidified the deal for me. So on top of playing baseball, playing all those other things, I do want to add the importance of education and what acquired knowledge is all about.
Well, I think this is important because part of our show, we've had a thread, and you know, you had a monster career at Michigan State as a Spartan. I'm from Ann Arbor. I would love to have you come to Ann Arbor. But you went to the Spartan side, and you had an amazing career. I talked about the catch that you had against Michigan, and I'd love you to talk about your experience as a college athlete, because that's something that's dear to my heart that I spend a lot of time with on my campus. But this whole idea of you balancing academics and being a student athlete, can you talk a little bit about what that was like as a major college athlete for you to kind of compete and maintain? What was an important balance to you?
Yeah, it was something that, the background. I had two brothers that played college football. My parents were educators, so they kept they kept sports and athletics separate, or sports and academics separate. And I mean, there were days when I was real young where I couldn't go to practice if I didn't get my homework done. So to be missing practice at that early age, that started to build an important how important it was. So once I got to college, it really came down to how you gonna manage your time and be a athlete, be a student, and be 18, 19 years old on a college campus, you know, and to see some of my peers not have the same upbringing. When they got here, I mean, they're out after the first semester because they couldn't balance the two. And I want to say it's a credit to, I got to say, my family and also the people who I grew up with. Our Rocket football team, we had a study hall that we had to go to. And that was separating time management. And that was, I mean, RJ, we grew up together, and our parents were on sticklers on academics, and these are my friends and people who I hung out with. So it was something that was a commonality. And the other part is, you know, make sure you choose your friends right. Hang out with people who are going to propel you to do the right things. And, and as a kid growing up, my family, the people they hung around with, the friends that I had, I mean, like RJ can say, his brother Justin and I, we're very, very good friends, and basketball was one thing, sports was one thing, but we all stayed together and we all wanted to be the best. So when I got to college, I surrounded myself with the same type of like-minded people who understood how important football was here, who understood the value and how important getting education was, and also who knew how to have fun and enjoy being an 18, 19-year-old in East Lansing. So I think to answer that question in a few words is time management.
Time management. You love, I always had a faculty member who sat with some students. He said, look, in the first year, you got to learn time management. So,
yeah.
You know, for all the young listeners out there who are trying to get at that, it's that success in life right there. That's a nugget for you. Yeah, that's it.
Ain't nobody going to be there telling you to get up. Ain't nobody going to be there to tell you to go somewhere. But they will be there to tell you to get out, and they'll be there to tell you you need to go somewhere else.
One of the things I want you to maybe talk about, you know, in terms of your athletic experience at Michigan State, can you talk about some of the highlights that you had there and some of the memorable moments that you had there?
It was the whole overall, everything was a blessing. And I never forget my very first game. We played Oregon. It was a Thursday night on ESPN. And you walk in the locker room, you got the gloves laid out. You got everything laid out with ESPN. And that was, as a kid, that's a moment that I cherish forever. And, all the games against Michigan were a lot of fun. Penn State, my freshman year was a big game. My last year, my last game, we played Missouri. It wasn't a huge. Actually, it was the 9/11 was that year, so it was a makeup game. I don't know if I remember, but it was like a makeup game late in December, and that was my last college game that at home that I really remember. I mean, the Citrus Bowl against Florida. Playing at Michigan State at a Division I university as a kid growing up and being from Kalamazoo and having a chance to be on ESPN, and then towards the end of the career actually have people considering you to be a high draft choice. I mean, it was all God-given. It was hard work, and it was a blessing. And I pick Michigan State all over again.
And to me, that's powerful to talk about, because people don't think quite, you know, it becomes surreal. I mean, when they see someone like you having success, they don't know that, you know, they don't think about the fact that you're a young person having that type of success. In that environment. And before I hand it over to Phil, as you transition as a first-round draft choice to the Atlanta Falcons, what was that first year? I mean, because you just talked about, you know, first game as a Spartan, you know, ESPN, but now you're transitioning into professional athletics.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, and then Phil will come in and with a little follow-up there.
It was like a dream. I mean, God has blessed me to really live a life that it's been a blessing. And I think this might even have been the very first preseason game I played. But first of all, you know, you're entering the Atlanta Falcons, you get drafted. That's an amazing whole thing in itself, to be in the NFL, get drafted. I mean, that was amazing. So the very first preseason game we have, we play Dallas, and it's in Dallas, and Emmitt Smith's on across the field. And, I mean, it's not Tecmo Bowl, it's not Madden, it's Emmitt Smith across the field. You know what I'm saying? And it's us walking. It's the big stars in the field, Jerry Jones. I mean, all these, everything. It's everything. And it's, now, a lot of these feelings, a lot of these thoughts, I was in it. When you're in it, it's hard to really love it and appreciate it. So to sit back on it and think about it a lot, really, it really brings the memories out. But at that time, I mean, it's the Dallas Cowboys, one of America's most celebrated teams, and you're getting ready to play them, and this is the start of a dream. And from that whole time, I think the older I got, the less it became a dream and more of a reality of what the business is. But to enter it and to have that privilege was very few people have that chance to say that and to do that. And for me to be able to live it for as long as I did, I'm extremely thankful.
Oh, wow. So Todd, this is Phil here. Obviously, you had an excellent collegiate career as well as a professional career in the NFL. And one of the reasons, you know, I really wanted to target you to get you on the show is because you have done an excellent job transitioning to your next career after the NFL. You know, recently you were a keynote speaker at the Personal Branding for Athletes, transitioning from the NFL to your next career, which was at LSU's Business School. Which is quite an honor for them to pick all the athletes and to pick a young man like yourself that has done so much in the little time that you've been away from the NFL. Can you talk about that experience as well as your transition to your current career?
Yeah. Technically I wasn't a keynote speaker for that event, but I did it the first year, and when I went into it, when I stopped playing, I went through a depression, and I didn't really have any identity of who I was, what I was about. I didn't know much about me as a person because I got caught up in me as an athlete, which is part of why I go by Todd now as a person. So I went through that whole ups, downs, that interesting time for those couple months, and then I got presented with an opportunity to go to LSU for the NFL Personal Branding seminar. And I went, and I realized there's a lot of guys in my same situation. And I started a my brother Tico started a janitorial supplies company, and I jumped into that with him. I invested with him about, say, 4 or 5 years before all this. And so my thought is, you know, get done playing, jump in there, and I'd go. But even then, I still didn't feel like I had an identity. So going to this branding seminar, it really gave me a lot of confidence. It gave me a new focus on the personal side of me and how I can translate from athlete to businessman and do it in a successful manner. And after a year of that, I had a chance to start some businesses, start some nonprofits, had a chance to get going, and the confidence and the success came from that seminar. So this past July, they had the same exact group and invited me back again to share just my experience. And it's a different lifestyle when you go from being one place 1 minute over a phone call. Instantly everything changes, and everything that everyone has viewed you as is no longer the case. Mm-hmm. And you still have to live and be and try to exist without that being the focal point of your life. And I just felt like, and I believed I had so much more, and that seminar really brought it out. And even some of the guys that I talked to today who went there and who are now being successful, it is a period where you have to get acclimated to a different type of life. And a lot of my volunteering and a lot of my helping really brought so many things back home to me compared to what I was living in, the way the people I was hanging around and what was fact and what was reality to the people where I'm from. And that changed my life as well. So after leaving football and after the branding seminar and really getting courage and knowing some strength of who I was, then I was really able to get involved with people and have a genuine heart that really wanted to help and help change lives. And that's where I'm at today.
I mean, that's a perfect transition. I mean, your story, which brings us to your work today. You recently developed an organization by the name of New World Flood, and
yep.
You know, just going throughout the website, the slogan says a single raindrop is the beginning of a flood.
Yep,
can you talk about that statement as well as what this organization is working on right now?
Yes, New World Flood, newworldflood.org. You can check it out while I talk. It's about every person, whether it's a kid, whether it's a adult, every single person matters. Every single person has self-worth, self-value. So with every single person being a raindrop, every raindrop from the sky, when it comes down, it has a purpose. It starts off billions of miles in the sky, and then it comes and lands right on your shoulder. It has a purpose to come to you. Now, as a child, an adult, being born, there's billions of different things going on, and these are two people, your parents, and you get born, you have a purpose. But in order to fulfill your purpose, you have to know how valuable you are, and you have to know your self-worth, and you have to know what education and wisdom and all these things do, so you don't make dumb decisions. You don't put yourself, your body, your mind in compromising situations. You value yourself at a high peace. And if each person has that one thought, if each person has that value, that self-esteem, and one person goes and picks up trash, and another one says they matter, and they go and help somebody else, now you got different people throughout the community who have their values who say, no, I'm not going to do that, or yes, I'm going to come help. You have people doing that all over. Then you have a flood of giving and service throughout your whole entire community, and things will happen, and a new world will be created of giving and service. So that's the whole philosophy behind that newworldflood.org.
Now, Todd, this is Devon. You were just in Africa recently, weren't you? Can you talk a little about that experience?
Yeah, I about, this is my second trip there, and about 8 months ago, I was blessed to help to not really co-found the school, but I was blessed to get involved with a school there. And within the last 2 years, we've been able to help the school really grow. The age group is from 2 to 7, and then once you turn 7, you enter in Arusha, Tanzania. So you enter the Tanzanian standardized test. And if you can't pass that test, then you really have some issues to how you're really going to continue your education. So we have a school that prepares kids for this test. And being there this past, actually last month, I was there, and we started a new part of the school called the Flood Gardens, where we're tearing down, not literally tearing down the walls, but we're expanding the classroom outside the four walls, and we're teaching kids about farming. We're teaching them how to raise animals. We're teaching them how to educate with stuff that they have, with materials that they have around them. But at the same time, the garden's producing vegetables and food for the people in the village to eat, and they're also being able to take what they grow into the community to sell. So we've been able to take a school and continue their education and grow the numbers, and we've been able to impact the community with food and with empowering them to possibly sustain a living. But the overall goal is we gave them a chance to believe in life and what is out there for them, and that people care, and that they have a chance to succeed, and they're not just forgotten people. And a big mission that I have and that we're doing is we're getting ready to buy 10 acres of land there now and help them create their community with our assistance. We're not coming in and running the show for them. We're giving them the tools so their culture can grow, and them as their people, they can grow it with all that they want. But we are helping them, and we're assisting them just with some of the structure. And with this so far, we've had an amazing turnout with people who are wanting to help, with the young men who are there taking more of ownership in what they can be. I'm talking 13, 14-year-old young men who are believing that they will get out of a slum or have a chance to actually get a job. And it's big and powerful to do that when you see young men here, young women here, who are fighting for the same thing. But to be able to have that impact on the other side of the world in a culture that is deep-rooted in all of us, to be able to have impact in those people and our people, it moves me like no other. So that's what I got going on over there.
Todd, I mean, I think, you know, I'm so glad that at least Real Sports Guys were able to provide you with this space to talk about these things. Because I think in the world of sports, we often don't have a chance to see the great impact a lot of our great leaders I've had in the legacy of Lou Alcindor and all the other folks who had that greater kind of view of their impact in the world, now Kareem. And one of the other things that you've done is you have this Lunch with a Purpose, right? I think I got that right. Now talk a little bit about that. I mean, this is another thing that you do to try to, again, impact people.
Yeah, and this one we created, this is about 2 years now, and about five people all together, we created this in an effort to get people to do something. We were all doing things, and so many people would say, man, that's a great idea, you're doing it. I'd love to do it, but I don't know how, and I don't know where, and I don't have time, and whatever the reason was. So we came together, and everyone has a lunch hour. So we found different organizations throughout the city, the Lansing area, and we would on Thursdays, once a week, from 12 to 1, we would choose a nonprofit, and we would call it Lunch for the Purpose, and we'd ask people to sign up, and we would show up at noon, and we would volunteer for an hour. Now, when we would come, we'd have to start out with six people. We did six people. We did the Ronald McDonald House of Mid-Michigan first, and we went and we made lunch for them. And after doing that, it was an amazing feeling we felt. And we said, well, let's start it. Let's do it next week. And then we did it next week, went to another place. And then we said, how about more people should try to do this? And we were like, yeah, you know, all the people who say they want. So we put it on our Facebook, and we invited people. And then pretty soon we ended up showing up with places with like 30, 40, 50 people. And to have 50 people show up at one place at a nonprofit that doesn't have much help, much assistance to show up, that's 50 hours of work that you get. I mean, we would come, whatever it was, whether it was yard work or folding blankets, sorting out clothes, organizing canned goods, whatever it was, we would come with a big group, and we would do in an hour. Some groups said that it would have took them 4 to 5 months to do what we've done, and it really helped get them either up out of a hole in certain times, certain areas, and it really helped propel them forward. A big thing that we do is we always take a video, and that's lunchwithapurpose.com. or lunchwithapurpose.org, either or. But we also do a video of the organization. They don't have money to pay for a 30-second or a 30-minute or a minute commercial, let's say. So we're able to make one for them, put it on our website. They can put it on their website. They can do whatever they want, and a chance for them to raise awareness in their own arena. But a big part of it was there are a lot of nonprofits that have been around for a while that people never knew about. And by us going, it really brought attention to those organizations. And we've had multiple members who started out every Thursday doing what we were doing with our group. And then they ended up finding a organization that hit home with them. And they leave our group, and then they become almost permanent volunteers at another organization that has helped. And, you know, we don't ask that you come to every Lunch for the Purpose event that we have, but we do ask that you go somewhere and do something on your lunch hour. And if you're able to, in your workspace, not leave, so you can't leave your office, but you can walk around your parking lot, you can call an organization that needs to make a bunch of phone calls, and you can sit at your desk and run through their phone list and send out emails or whatever it is. You can find a way with an hour to help, and that's what the purpose of Lunch for the Purpose is all about.
Hey, we're here on the Real Sports Guys. We're here with Todd Duckett, former star at Michigan State, at the Spartans, former Atlanta Falcons, founder of New World Flood, where one raindrop can create a flood. And I think that's an important understanding. And these things that we're talking about is very exciting. And I hope that you go to www.newworldflood.org to find out more about what Todd is doing. You know, Todd, you gave us more than we anticipated. We'd love to have you come back and talk about what other things that you have going on. We definitely want to thank you for being on the Real Sports Guys tonight, and we definitely appreciate having you here.
I appreciate y'all having me. It's a great show y'all do. And keep it up, man. Keep it up. Let me know if I can ever be of an assistance or anything, but it's beautiful. Beautiful. I appreciate your time, and thank you for the opportunity.
And you keep doing the people's work, man. Take care.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Todd Duckett. That's what we're talking about, y'all. Incredible. We're going to bring R.J. Page back in. And the reason why this is important, and we'll let R.J. talk a little bit. And you heard Todd refer to R.J. A lot in the connection But, you know, RJ, I want to give you a chance to have a reaction to what you heard. It was an amazing interview, a lot there, but I want to get your initial reaction to what we talked about.
Indeed, man. That was dating for me. You know, I used to watch Todd run around my crib playing ball, playing football with my little brother. And I just got to say, man, I'm extremely impressed and proud of the man that he's become. It did me well to hear all the great things he had going on. And you mentioned Kareem while you were interviewing him. I sometimes when I'm watching sports right now, I get a little disappointed in today's athletes. I yearn for the days when we had Kareem, we had Jim Brown, we had Bill Russell. These were athletes who stood for something, who had a cause. They knew where they came from, and they supported where they came from. And to see and hear what Todd is doing in Africa, what he's doing in the Lansing community, man, major kudos. Keep doing what you're doing, brother. And, man, the sports world would be a lot better place if we had more athletes like Todd.
But, and to me, that's what's most powerful about what he's talking about is because, you know, even when you talk about the Lunch for a Purpose, that's a program where you're really committing a little bit of time to make a big difference. And, you know, that's something that I think is amazing that he's doing. And I think you're right. I mean, we've been talking about this from the early part of our show, and this is a mission of, you know, what we talk about Real Sports Guys is, you know, this whole idea of building capacity to do bigger things, that you as an athlete, you have the opportunity to have an impact on the greater community. And how do we, you know, particularly in our colleges and universities, and even before that, again, as you heard about the story, that stuff started from early on, you know, kind of building those values around having a greater impact. And I think that's what's so great about hearing what he's doing, because you can hear the passion. You know, the same passion that he played the game of football with is the same passion he played the game of life with. So I'm blown away. I'm looking forward to having him back on the show again. Early on, he said something interesting. It sounded like he agreed with me. RJ. I know he grew up in your living room.
The first thing he said was he draws the line to mess with folks' livelihood.
Did I draw that line? That's the line we all drew. I know. But then he went on to say, what? What did he go on to say?
He liked stickers on his helmet.
He said he liked stickers on his helmet.
Norris didn't even have stickers on the helmet. I don't know what Todd was talking about.
So he did support a little bit of what I said, because that kind of competition you're not going to have on it. But, I mean, his story, his journey, it continues when we have Eric Mays on the show. It's that thread, that thing that they had in high school, even as stars in high school, they kind of had that. They had they had their priorities in place.
You know, man, Kalamazoo, we keep pumping them out, man.
I know that. I'm about to bring some more folks on here with some different stuff, but to me, I think that's an important thing for folks to be listening. If you can be great as an athlete.
When's Ann Arbor going to stand up, Divine? Who we got coming on from Ann Arbor?
We're about to roll some out. Let's don't make it like that. And know that Eric was shaped by his experience in Ann Arbor.
Y'all getting lapped by Kalamazoo now, man.
I'm understanding that. We try to run that one. I'm about to pivot on y'all and get more to it. I think we got Phil T back. Phil, do you have any reflections that you want to bring to it?
Yeah, I think it was great having Todd on. You know, those listening from the southwestern Michigan area or even from Michigan State, they'll remember that, I mean, one can make a reasonable argument that Todd T.J. Duckett may be the most accomplished high school athlete to ever come out of Kalamazoo, and we're speaking of a city that has produced the likes of Derek Jeter, of Greg Jennings with Green Bay. You know, Todd was very modest when he said, yeah, I'd run the 100th and I'd throw the shot, come over and, you know, play baseball. I mean, this was a guy who led the conference in home runs, only playing at half the games, setting state shot put and discus records, and also running on a leg of the 4x100 relay team that won the state championship as well. So, you know, when you think about that combination of speed and size, you know, he even played quarterback in high school as well as linebacker. So he's a very dynamic Jim Thorpe type of athlete coming out of high school. But it's just very refreshing to see how he has developed so much as a young man to become a man and just develop in terms of what he's doing in his new career. Just outstanding to see that.
Well, one of the things I want to make sure I plug for those listeners are you are the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. You know, if you want to follow up on Todd's story and what he's doing, go to www.newworldflood.org. That's newworldflood.org. And you can also go to www.lunchwithapurpose.com. That's lunchwithapurpose.com to learn more about what he's doing. This has been fascinating. Next week, we got the coach, Brett Bielema.